Get ready to explore the other side of the Jordan River.
Yeah.
A land that Dr. Elaine Phillips calls a blend of rugged beauty, biblical clashes, and seriously impressive cities.
Yeah.
We're diving deep into Transjordan and the Jordan Valley today.
Okay.
And trust me, you're going to want to grab your mental hiking boots for this one. It's going to be a journey.
It is.
What's often overlooked is that this region is key to understanding so much of what we read in the Bible. It's not just a backdrop.
Right.
It's practically a character in these stories.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes Dr. Phillips's lecture so fascinating. She doesn't just list facts. She weaves together geography, history, and those epic biblical narratives.
Absolutely.
So to start, can you give us a little background on what exactly Transjordan is?
Sure. Transjordan is the land east of the Jordan River, and it's incredibly diverse.
Okay.
Think Golan Heights, Gilead, Ammon, Moab, and even Edom. Each with its own unique flavor.
Flavor, okay.
So to speak. And flavor is a good word.
Yeah.
Because Dr. Phillips really emphasizes the contrasts. You've got these fertile volcanic plains.
Yeah.
Perfect for growing grapes and raising cattle.
Yes.
But then, bam.
Right.
Rugged mountains.
Yes.
Deep canyons.
Absolutely. A real change of scenery.
Talk about a change of scenery.
Yeah.
And you can't forget the strategic importance of Transjordan.
Right.
It's a bridge between empires.
Yeah.
Which, as you can imagine, led to a lot of conflict.
Oh, absolutely.
This wasn't exactly a peaceful vacation spot in ancient times.
Not at all.
Not at all. Now, let's zoom in on one of those regions.
Okay.
The Golan Heights.
Hmm.
I know it's in the news a lot these days.
Yes.
But we're going way back.
Okay.
What's interesting about the Golan is how its geology shaped its history.
Yeah. Dr. Phillips points out this unique combination.
Okay.
Basalt outflow over limestone.
Okay, so basalt's that volcanic rock, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it creates incredibly fertile soil.
It's perfect for agriculture.
Okay.
Which would made it highly desirable.
It does.
But beneath that basalt, you've got limestone.
Interesting.
Which is porous.
Okay.
Meaning water can seep through.
Okay.
Creating these intricate cave systems.
So not just fertile land,
right,
but potential hiding places too.
Exactly. Okay. I'm starting to see how this all connects.
Yes, and it gets even better.
Okay.
We have the Yarmouk Wadi.
Okay.
This dramatic canyon marking the southern border of the Golan Heights.
Mm.
It's a natural barrier.
Okay.
And according to Dr. Phillips, might be connected to one of those aha moments in the Gospels.
Wait, are we talking about the story of Jesus healing the demoniac? The one with the pigs?
That's the one. Dr. Phillips suggests that this might have happened near a Roman legion.
Oh, interesting.
And you'll never guess their mascot.
Okay, you've got me hooked. Don't tell me. A pig.
A pig.
Wow, okay. The legion was stationed at a town called Gergesa, which is on the shoreline of the Sea of Galilee.
Right.
And just above Gerasa, on the cliffs, was the Roman city of Hippus.
So we've got pigs running down a steep hillside.
Yes.
Possibly towards a legion with a pig mascot.
Possibly, yeah.
Talk about adding a layer of, well, irony to the story.
It's those details that suddenly make these ancient accounts feel so much more real.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Absolutely. It's not just happening in some vague Bible land anymore.
Right.
It's a specific place with specific features influencing the event.
Exactly. Now let's head south.
Okay.
To another region Dr. Phillips highlights. Gilead.
Gilead.
She describes it as a land constantly at war.
Okay.
Almost like a biblical battleground.
Which makes sense geographically. It's sandwiched between so many powerful kingdoms.
Right.
Yeah.
And she brings up the prophet Amos.
Okay.
Who condemns Damascus for their brutality against the Gileadites.
Mm.
He uses this vivid image, threshing Gilead with iron threshing sleds.
You know, I've seen pictures of those heavy stone slabs with teeth that separate the grain from the chaff to use that as an image for violence.
Brutal.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes about the kind of conflict that was happening in this region.
It really does.
Yeah.
Now, within Gilead, Dr. Phillips mentions a place called Remote Gilead.
Right.
Which sounds like an oxymoron.
It does, doesn't it?
But this remoteness was key to its strategic importance.
Exactly.
Okay.
It was a junction on the ancient Transjordanian Highway.
So even though it was remote,
yes,
everyone had to pass through it.
Exactly.
Makes sense. Isn't this also where the story of Jacob wrestling with God or an angel takes place?
You're thinking of the Jabbok Wadi.
Okay.
This incredibly deep canyon cutting through Gilead.
It's not just a scenic spot, is it?
Not at all.
Okay.
Dr. Phillips argues that the Jabbok Wadi is crucial to understanding Jacob's story.
Mm.
This isn't just a random wrestling match. It's a struggle for identity,
okay,
for blessing, for a new future.
Okay.
And the setting mirrors that struggle.
That makes so much sense. The isolation.
Yes.
The physical challenge of navigating a wadi.
Right.
It all adds another layer of meaning to the story.
Absolutely.
It's almost as if the landscape itself is pushing Jacob to confront his past,
yeah,
and embrace a new way of being.
Yes.
Wow, that gives me chills. Okay, from this dramatic wadi,
yeah,
where do we head next? Okay, so we've explored the Golan Heights and this incredibly dramatic wadi where Jacob wrestled with, well, either God or an angel. All talk about intense. Where does Dr. Phillips take us next on this Transjordanian adventure?
Well, from the drama of Gilead, we move south.
Okay.
To a region where conflict was almost constant. Ammon, Moab, and the Mishore.
The Mishore? That name doesn't ring a bell.
It's not as well known as some of the other places we've talked about, but it's crucial to understanding the power dynamics in this region.
Mm.
Mishore simply means flat or level.
Okay.
It's basically a plateau.
Okay.
Perfect for grazing livestock and agriculture.
So prime real estate in ancient times.
That
explains the conflict.
Exactly. Dr. Phillips calls this area a complex tapestry of kingdoms.
Okay.
Because you have Ammon, Moab, and the Israelite tribes all vying for control of this valuable land.
So is this just about the land being good for farming? Or was there something more to why it was so fought over?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And I think Dr. Phillips would say it's both.
Okay.
On one hand, you have the practical need for resources.
Okay.
Fertile land, water sources, access to trade routes.
Right.
But on the other hand,
yeah,
you have these deep-seated historical and cultural tensions playing out.
Like that sibling rivalry between Jacob and Esau we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
Their descendants ended up settling in these neighboring territories.
Exactly. And those tensions are woven into the biblical narrative.
Okay.
We see it in the stories of Saul and David battling the Ammonites. For example, it's not just about conquering territory.
Okay.
It's about these ancient grudges and power struggles playing out over generations.
Wow. So these seemingly local conflicts are actually connected to these much larger,
yes,
almost epic themes.
Right.
That's fascinating.
Right.
And it reminds us that these biblical stories aren't just isolated events.
Right.
They're part of this ongoing human drama,
yeah,
shaped by geography, resources.
Yeah.
And those deep-seated desires for power and control.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've got the Golan Heights in the north, Gilead with its dramatic wadi.
Yeah.
And now this tapestry of kingdoms further south.
Yes.
What's next on our Transjordanian tour?
Let's head further south.
Okay.
To the land of Edom.
Edom.
This is the territory settled by the descendants of Esau.
Okay.
Jacob's twin brother.
Right.
Remember that whole story about sibling rivalry?
Oh, yeah.
Stolen blessings.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic. So are we talking about the area around Petra?
You're exactly right.
Okay.
And Dr. Phillips does a fantastic job of describing the unique geology of Edom.
Mm.
Limestone plateaus and those dramatic sandstone formations that make Petra so iconic.
Speaking of iconic, didn't the Nabataeans build Petra?
Exactly.
Those guys were the masters of desert survival and trade.
Exactly. We talked about them in the Negev episode, remember?
Yeah.
They were able to thrive in this arid environment, controlling trade routes and creating ingenious water systems.
And Petra was their crowning achievement.
Right.
It's breathtaking.
Yes.
But it also seems so, well, impregnable.
Yeah.
Like, how do you even conquer a city built into a cliff face?
That's precisely what made the Edomites feel so secure.
Hmm.
Dr. Phillips describes entering Petra through the Sick,
okay,
this incredibly narrow canyon,
right,
that winds its way into the heart of the city.
Okay, I can picture it almost like a secret entrance.
Right.
Hidden away in the cliffs.
Exactly. It would have been incredibly easy to defend. But this sense of security also bred a certain amount of arrogance.
Okay.
Which the prophet Obadiah picks up on.
Wait, is this where that quote about those who dwell in the clefts of the rock comes from?
That's exactly it.
I remember reading that Sunday school.
Yeah.
But I never connected it to Petra.
Obadiah is basically saying, you think you're safe up there in your fancy rock-cut city? Think again.
Mm.
He's prophesying the downfall of Edom despite their seemingly secure position.
It's amazing how the geography is woven into the prophecy itself.
It shows how these locations aren't just random backdrops.
Right.
They're integral to understanding the biblical narrative.
Mm.
And in this case, it's a reminder that even the most impressive human achievements are ultimately subject to a higher power.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
Yes.
Literally. We've explored the Golan Heights, Gilead, Ammon, Moab, the Mishore.
Yeah.
And now Edom with its incredible city of Petra.
Right.
Before we move on, I have to ask, what about Sodom and Gomorrah?
Oh, yeah.
Weren't those cities supposedly located somewhere near the Dead Sea?
You're right. That's one of the enduring mysteries of this region.
Yeah.
Many scholars place Sodom and Gomorrah at the southern end of the Dead Sea.
Okay.
But Dr. Phillips suggests there's biblical evidence pointing to a location further north.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
What kind of evidence are we talking about?
Well, the biblical accounts describe Sodom and Gomorrah as being located in a fertile valley, well-watered everywhere.
Okay.
Like the Garden of Eden.
Right.
And there's a specific mention of the Valley of Siddim.
Okay.
Which Dr. Phillips believes might have been near the northern end of the Dead Sea, where the Jordan River flows in.
So instead of these cities being located in a barren wasteland,
right,
they might have been in this lush, almost paradise-like setting.
Yeah.
That adds a whole other layer of meaning to the story, doesn't it?
It really does.
It raises questions about why these cities were destroyed.
Right.
What lessons we can draw from their fate. And how we understand the concept of divine judgment.
It is.
Wow, that's heavy stuff.
It is.
And it's a reminder that these biblical stories aren't just ancient history.
Yeah.
They continue to challenge us,
right,
provoke us, and invite us to grapple with some of life's biggest questions.
Yes, absolutely.
Speaking of big questions, we've talked a lot about the land east of the Jordan River.
Right.
But what about the Jordan Valley itself?
Yeah.
That's got to be a key part of the story, right?
Absolutely. In fact, the name itself gives us a clue about what to expect.
Okay.
The word Jordan comes from the Hebrew Yared, which means to go down.
Okay.
And that's exactly what the Jordan River does.
Down to the Dead Sea. That's a pretty dramatic drop in elevation, isn't it?
Over 1,300 feet from the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea.
Wow.
It's one of the lowest points on Earth.
Yeah.
And Dr. Phillips points out that the Jordan Valley itself is actually divided into three distinct regions.
Okay.
The Gor, the Zor, and the Marl.
Okay. I'm going to need a little help with those terms.
Sure.
Gor, Zor, Marl. It sounds like a Dr. Seuss book.
It does, doesn't it?
But these are key to understanding the unique geography of the valley.
Yes.
Okay.
The Gor is the flat, fertile plain that runs along the Jordan River.
Hmm.
It's where most of the agriculture took place.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right.
What about the Zor?
The Zor is the wilder, more rugged area on either side of the Gor.
Okay.
It's characterized by these dense thickets of trees and shrubs.
Okay.
The kind of place you might imagine bandits hiding out in.
Ah, so this is the Gaon Hayarden mentioned in the Bible.
Yeah.
The place where people would go to hide or escape danger.
Exactly. And then you have the Marl, which is this kind of chalky, white soil found closer to the Dead Sea.
Mm.
It's not as fertile as the Gor, but it has its own unique characteristics.
So three distinct zones within the Jordan Valley.
Yes.
The fertile Gor, the wild Zor, and the chalky Marl.
That's right.
Got it. But what about the Dead Sea itself?
Yeah.
That's got to be the most iconic feature of the Jordan Valley.
It is. And Dr. Phillips reminds us that its Hebrew name is Yam Hamelech.
Okay.
Which means Sea of Salt.
Sea of Salt?
That's actually a more accurate description.
Mm.
Because even though it's called the Dead Sea, there are microorganisms that live there.
Right. It's not completely devoid of life.
Right.
But it is incredibly salty. I remember floating in the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
It was like trying to swim in a giant bowl of salt water.
It's about 10 times saltier than the ocean.
Wow.
And it's incredibly deep.
Okay.
Reaching depths of over 1,300 feet below sea level.
Wow.
With another 1,300 feet of water on top of that.
Wow. That's hard to even imagine. So we've got this incredibly deep, incredibly salty lake at the lowest point on Earth.
Yeah.
Talk about a place of extremes.
It really is.
And unfortunately, the Dead Sea is facing some serious environmental challenges these days.
It is.
Its water level is dropping due to drought and water diversion.
Right. It's a reminder of how interconnected everything is.
Yeah.
And how human actions can have unintended consequences on these delicate ecosystems.
Absolutely.
And speaking of human actions, let's zoom in on two key cities in the Jordan Valley that Dr. Phillips highlights. Jericho and Beth Shan.
Hmm.
Both have rich histories and fascinating archaeological remains.
They do.
Jericho. Didn't we talk about that briefly in the episode on the tribe of Benjamin?
Yes.
It's that city with the walls that came tumbling down, right?
That's the one.
But it's worth revisiting because of its strategic importance.
Right.
It's located at a crossroads of ancient trade routes, which made it a valuable prize for any conquering army.
Exactly.
And didn't Dr. Phillips mention that there are actually two Jerichos?
Yes. There's the Old Testament Jericho, one from the Book of Joshua,
right,
which is essentially a tell,
okay,
a mound built up over centuries of human habitation.
Okay.
And then there's the New Testament Jericho,
a city built by Herod the Great during the Roman period.
Mm.
It was a bustling center of activity in Jesus's time.
So we've got two Jerichos, each representing a different layer of history,
yeah,
and a different chapter in the story of this region.
Exactly.
And then we have Beth-shan.
Yes.
Which is unique because it's the only Decapolis city located west of the Jordan River.
It is.
The Decapolis. Yeah. That's that group of 10 Roman cities, right?
Right.
Most of them were east of the Jordan.
Yeah.
So why was Beth-shan on the wrong side of the river?
It all comes down to its location. Beth-shan, or Beit-shan, as it was known in the Old Testament, was situated at a crucial junction.
Okay.
Controlling access to both the Jordan Valley and the Herod Valley.
Ah, so it's like that hinge we talked about earlier, connecting two important regions.
Exactly.
No wonder it was strategically important.
Exactly. And the ruins of Beth-shan are incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
You can still see remnants of a grand Roman theater, bad complexes, temples.
It's like stepping back into Roman times.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine the gladiatorial combats.
Yes.
The chariot races, the theatrical performances that would have taken place there.
It would have been quite a spectacle.
Yeah.
And the baths complexes are a reminder of how important hygiene and social interaction were in Roman culture.
I've always been fascinated by Roman baths.
Yeah.
They weren't just places to get clean. They were social hubs.
Yeah.
Places to meet friends, discuss politics, maybe even strike a business deal.
Exactly. And then you have the temples.
Right.
Those grand structures dedicated to the Roman gods.
Yeah.
Dr. Phillips ended her lecture with a striking image.
Okay.
The fallen columns of a Roman temple at Beth-shan.
It's almost like a metaphor, isn't it?
Yeah.
Those columns lying broken and scattered are a reminder of the transience of human power.
Right.
Empires rise and fall, cities flourish and decay, but the land itself endures.
It's a sobering thought, but also a hopeful one.
Hmm.
The land that witnessed the rise and fall of Rome now witnesses the birth and growth of new nations.
Right.
New cultures, new stories.
It makes you wonder what stories this land will tell in the centuries to come.
It does.
What will future archaeologists uncover?
Yeah.
What new discoveries await us?
It's a reminder that our exploration of Transjordan and the Jordan Valley is just beginning.
It is.
There's always more to learn, more to discover, more to appreciate.
I love that thought. It's like we've just scratched the surface.
Exactly. And speaking of scratching the surface, let's talk about the Jordan River itself.
Okay.
It's not a grand, mighty river like the Nile or the Euphrates.
Right.
It's more meandering.
Okay.
With dense thickets lining its banks.
It's almost like you're underestimating it, though. It's not just a pretty little stream, is it?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
The Jordan River is deceptively powerful.
Okay.
Especially during flood season.
Yeah.
And those thickets played a crucial role in several biblical narratives.
Like the story of the Israelites crossing the Jordan River under Joshua's leadership.
That's right.
That's going to be one of the most iconic scenes in the Bible.
It is.
And it all happened right here.
Right.
In this seemingly ordinary valley along the banks of this meandering river.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that God often works in unexpected ways. In unexpected places.
Absolutely.
It's one thing to read about it.
Yeah.
But it's another to visualize it happening in this specific location.
Right.
With the river swollen and the land buzzing with anticipation.
It must have been an incredible sight.
Yeah.
And it's not just about a miraculous crossing.
Mm.
It's about entering a new land, facing new challenges, and ultimately fulfilling a promise.
It's a powerful story of faith.
Yeah.
Courage and perseverance.
Yes.
And speaking of powerful, Dr. Phillips mentioned this incredible mosaic.
Okay.
From a 6th century church in Medaba.
Right.
It actually depicts the Jordan River,
uh-huh,
the Dead Sea,
yeah,
and even Jericho.
It's like having a snapshot of the region from over 1,500 years ago.
It's incredible.
And what's so fascinating is that it's not just a map.
Okay.
It's a work of art, full of intricate details and even a bit of humor.
Wait, humor?
Yeah.
In a 6th century mosaic.
Remember how we talked about the Dead Sea being so salty that nothing can live in it?
Yeah.
Well, the mosaic actually shows a fish swimming away from the Dead Sea.
Okay.
Like it's trying to escape the salt.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I love that these ancient artists had a sense of humor, even when depicting sacred subjects.
Right.
It's a reminder that art and faith,
yeah,
history and humor,
uh-huh,
can coexist,
yeah,
and even complement each other.
Exactly. And it's a reminder that these ancient people weren't so different from us.
Right.
They had their own struggles, joys, and ways of expressing themselves.
Okay, so we've explored this incredible region,
right,
from the Golan Heights to the Dead Sea,
yeah,
unearthing biblical stories, exploring ancient ruins, and even encountering a few pigs and a runaway fish along the way.
And a runaway fish, yes.
Oh, what a journey. But I feel like we've only just scratched the surface.
We have.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
There's always more to discover.
Yeah.
More to appreciate, more to learn.
Right.
And in the final part of our deep dive,
okay,
we'll explore the enduring legacy of Transjordan and the Jordan Valley.
Okay.
Considering its significance for us today.
I can't wait. Welcome back to our deep dive into Transjordan and the Jordan Valley. We've covered so much ground, from the Golan Heights to the Dead Sea,
yeah,
those incredible sandstone cliffs of Petra.
Right.
And even that hilarious mosaic with the fish trying to escape the salty Dead Sea.
Oh, yeah.
What a journey.
It has been.
But I feel like, you know, we've only just scratched the surface in a way.
Well, we have, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
There's always more to discover.
Right.
More to appreciate, more to learn.
So in this final part,
okay,
let's shift our focus from the past to the present. What can we learn from all of this? What insights can we carry with us as we engage with the world around us?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is the power of place.
Okay.
These locations aren't just backdrops for biblical stories.
Mm-hmm.
They're integral to the narratives themselves.
Right.
They shape the events, the characters,
yeah,
even the deeper meaning of what's happening.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Like, think about Jacob wrestling with God or an angel in that Jabbok Wadi.
Right.
Could that story have happened anywhere else?
It's hard to imagine it unfolding in a bustling city or a peaceful meadow.
Right.
Isn't it? The isolation,
hmm,
the rugged terrain.
Yeah.
The sense of being in a liminal space.
Right.
It all adds layers of meaning to Jacob's struggle.
It's like the landscape itself is pushing him to confront his past,
right,
his fears,
uh-huh,
and ultimately wrestle with his own identity.
Exactly. And think about the Israelites crossing the Jordan River.
Right.
It wasn't just about entering the Promised Land.
Hmm.
It was about overcoming obstacles.
Okay.
Facing the unknown.
Hmm.
And trusting in God's guidance.
It reminds me that our own faith journeys aren't always easy.
That's right.
There are going to be challenges,
mm-hmm,
moments of doubt, and times when we feel lost.
Yeah.
But those are often the times when we grow the most.
Yes.
When we discover a deeper strength within ourselves.
And sometimes the most challenging landscapes lead to the greatest breakthroughs.
I like that.
Another takeaway for me is the importance of understanding multiple perspectives.
Okay.
We've seen how this region has been shaped by countless cultures and civilizations,
mm,
each leaving its own unique mark on the land.
It's like a tapestry.
Yeah.
Woven from threads of different colors and textures,
uh-huh,
each contributing to the overall beauty and complexity of the piece.
We've encountered Israelites,
yeah,
Ammonites,
mm,
Moabites,
mm,
Nabataeans,
right,
Romans, Byzantines.
Wow.
The list goes on.
Yeah.
And each group got its own beliefs, values, and ways of life to this region.
It's a powerful reminder that our world is full of diverse perspectives.
Yeah.
And that taking the time to understand and appreciate those differences can enrich our own lives.
Absolutely.
Broaden our horizons, yeah, and challenge our assumptions.
Now, let's bring this back to the present.
Okay.
Transjordan and the Jordan Valley are, yeah, still places of immense strategic importance.
Mm.
They're still grappling with issues of, mm, conflict,
right,
peace, resources,
right,
and identity.
I've read so much about, you know,
yeah,
the ongoing tensions in the region, the struggle for water rights,
right,
the search for lasting solutions.
Yeah.
It feels incredibly complex.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's easy to get bogged down in the headlines.
Right.
To focus solely on the conflicts and the seemingly intractable problems.
Yeah.
But Dr. Phillips reminds us that there's also hope.
What kind of hope?
We see it in the efforts to promote dialogue.
Okay.
To build bridges between communities.
Yeah.
To create a more sustainable future for everyone who calls this region home.
Mm.
There are organizations working tirelessly to foster understanding.
Right.
To address environmental challenges.
Uh-huh.
To empower marginalized communities.
It's a reminder that even in the most difficult circumstances,
yeah,
human beings have this incredible capacity for resilience, for compassion, for hope.
And it's a call to action for us
yeah.
as well.
Mm.
We may not be living in the Jordan Valley,
right?
But we can still make a difference.
Okay.
We can use our own voices and actions to promote peace,
yeah,
understanding and justice in our own communities and around the world.
It starts with being aware.
Yes.
With educating ourselves, with challenging our own biases,
uh-huh,
and with seeking out ways to contribute to a more just and compassionate world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, before we wrap up this deep dive,
okay,
I want to share a final thought from Dr. Phillips.
Okay.
She challenges us to imagine what it was like for the people who lived in this region throughout history. The Israelites,
right,
the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Nabataeans, the Romans.
Wow, so many others.
I love that challenge. It's so easy to just think of them as names in a history book,
right,
or characters in a story.
Yeah.
But they were real people, weren't they?
They were.
With their own hopes, dreams, and struggles.
Think about what their daily lives were like.
Yeah.
What did they believe?
Right,
what did they fear? How did they interact with this land?
Yeah.
What stories did they tell their children?
It's an invitation to go beyond the historical facts and engage with the human stories that make this region so compelling.
Exactly.
It's a reminder that history isn't just about the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the people who lived,
yeah,
loved, struggled, and dreamed in these places.
And their stories continue to resonate with us today.
They do.
They remind us of our shared humanity,
mm-hmm,
our interconnectedness across time and space.
Right.
And the enduring power of the human spirit to overcome challenges.
Yeah. To adapt to change and to create beauty even in the midst of hardship.
So as we conclude our deep dive into Transjordan and the Jordan Valley,
yes,
I want to thank you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Not just for sharing your expertise,
yeah,
but for inspiring us to keep exploring.
And I want to thank you and our listeners,
yeah,
for joining us on this journey.
Yeah.
May it spark your curiosity, deepen your understanding, and inspire you to see the world with fresh eyes.
Beautifully said.
Thank you.
And to everyone listening,
yes,
keep exploring, keep learning, keep asking questions.
Yes.
The world is full of incredible stories waiting to be discovered.
Absolutely.